Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up.
That's
brought
right.
Brought
to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine with Dr. Jack Schaefer, along with happytrees.co. At 3:30, we're going to have Colorado GOP Chairperson Dave Williams on. He put out a letter this morning talking about the debt ceiling and the way that Colorado Republicans were voting. And I like it. I mean, I don't think you would have seen this kind of letter from Chrissy Burton Brown.
No.
So we'll talk to him about that. But wanted to kind of jump into the debt ceiling.
Well, Jim Jackson, McCarthy takes a great game, but the chips are down. He's a rhino at heart.
Exactly. That's what we're going to talk about. Like, why do they always betray us? Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, why are we even shocked at this anymore? Right. We shouldn't even remotely
because it's not in their best interest and sometimes to betray us. I mean, quite frankly, McCarthy had gotten kudos ever since he kind of gave in to the conservatives and their demands, and I don't know how many months ago that was, but since then he's been on a roll, and now he's destroyed his caucus. He's got people wanting to replace him, and maybe somebody will.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders is voting against
him.
Yeah.
Somebody said Boehner too, which is a good question. I mean, Sundance, we'll talk about the Conservative Treehouse, said that Democrats fear their base and Republicans despise their base. And I agree with that, but the other part of it is that Republicans despise their leaders, Boehner, Paul Ryan. You can just go down the list.
We despise them back, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell, we despise him.
Chuck.
How dare we?
So if you want to call in, because we're going to open this up for discussion, because we want to get your guys' thoughts on why do they always betray us, even when there's really...
It's
to begin. So 888-627-6008 if you want to call in. If you're on Zoom, feel free to type your comments in there and we'll respond. And also want to let people know, a lot of times we get people respond to our Rumble posts and Podbean and stuff like that. And I always do my best to respond to that too. So don't worry. If you can't get in live, we'll take your comments later as well. I think it's... You know, I mean, they're doing everything. We were all like, and I guess you weren't because you're like, I don't believe it, right? But I was like at least somewhat optimistic when those guys, when they held out, they forced the vote, they forced McCarthy to agree to things like, cutting spending. Oh, I don't know, getting rid of the 87,000 IRS agents. And it was just like, what? I don't know, amnesia. I don't even remember saying that. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, Chuck and I were talking earlier, and I wanted to give, this is my sort of layperson's assessment, because I thought we could maybe start by explaining what exactly my assessment of what the debt ceiling means, right? So here's where it stands right now. Theoretically, they should be voting about 6:30 Denver time on it, right? It passed out of committee. The rules votes are being rammed down their throats. It's probably going to pass. They need a simple majority. So what's he need? 218 to win. I think he'd like to get, 150 Republicans. They're so far.
Well, he'd like to get above half of the caucus. So he wants to get 120. He'd love to get 120, which leaves a lot of room, right? I mean, that leaves 100 people voting against him. So
right, and right now there are 44 who have said that they will not vote for it, including, thank goodness, Lauren Boebert from Colorado, Ken Buck from Colorado. We'll talk about this with Dave. Doug Lamborn, you wouldn't say in the Liz Cheney vote, so you know he's voting for it, right? But the debt ceiling, because I was thinking about that, I'm like, it'd be as if. So the debt ceiling right now is, I mean, this is how much you can borrow, is what, like $31.4 trillion. So it's not like it's like $5 or $100,000. So it'd be like me. Let's say we had a credit card limit of $1 billion. And I went to Chuck and said, Oh my God, Chuck, it's going to come due. We need to raise Nordstrom's half yearly sale is on, by God. Right, we need to raise our credit card limit.
Right.
That's exactly the perfect analogy. So let's go back to the beginning. There isn't even any talk, which is what Republicans should be doing living within our means, right? Of actually cutting the budget. What we're talking about is how much do we want to extend our credit limit? So it would be, I would assume, or if you came to me and said, Julie, there's a bunch of golf PGA superstores having a sale. Yeah. We need to raise our credit card limit. And I would say, well, then Chuck, we're just
going to have to pay down. We can pay down so we can get there. No paying down.
We're talking about paying down. So that's the absurdity of it, right? That's how far we are from Republican conservative principles, right? We're talking, it's already at $31.4 trillion.
And it'll go up another $4 trillion during the next 2 years.
Right.
And it can go up, it can keep on going up to any level, really. It's just in 2 years from now, we'll have to prove the differential. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, wow. That's great.
And McCarthy is like, we drove a hard bargain. So we got nothing out of this. What do they say? So theoretically, some welfare recipients might have to work. They raise the age from 45 to 54, although the states have already, they've exempted them out.
Veterans, why should they have to work?
It's just ridiculous.
Then they have a pretend cut to the IRS who can backdoor and get all the money.
Backfill. Exactly. They say it'll go well, and we'll play some sound bites here. So rather than getting McCarthy promised us, he stood there and he said, we will defund the IRS. We will get rid of the 87,000 IRS agents, armed IRS agents, by the way, that they want to add. And you know why they want to add them, because they want to go after us,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And instead, they're going to go down to like maybe 85,000.
No, they're not going down any. The money doesn't come out of that particular fund. They just have to figure some other way to have the money flow. But they can have all 87,000.
Right. Exactly. Leo says uniparty. Julie, great analogy. Save me from typing all that. It is. It's just like raising your credit card limit. It's just ridiculous. And, when I was a young woman going away to college, my dad, and it was, that when you go away to college, they offer you credit cards. And my dad said, which is smart, he said, if you can't pay for it today, what makes you think you can pay for it tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And that's a problem with the Republicans and the Democrats. It's like, we can't. We don't care. The solution isn't to cut. The solution, it's just to continue raising it indefinitely. Now, sooner or later, they're going to start taxing us more because they're going to have to pay something. So,
they can just keep on printing.
Well, yeah, there we go. So, but
this isn't a matter of okay. Well, it used to be the debate would be okay. We'll go ahead and tax more to get more. No, now it's just that we just print it.
Yeah.
I mean, should we ever not become the world's currency? That's all going to come crashing.
You can pretend
down.
Like we're Venezuela again.
Yeah. Well,
and what's interesting is we have Representative Byron Donalds from Florida explaining why he's voting no, and explaining what we were in more detail.
I love this guy.
It's like we got nothing out of this. Nothing. So if we could please play the Representative Donalds soundbite, Thomas.
So the American people need to understand full and well. Do not listen to the talking points. Do not listen to the cool phrases that are being thrown out in commercials on CNN or Fox or MSNBC, because Washington is lying again. This bill has no cap in raising the debt, just a date in the future. We have no idea what that number is going to look like. Some people are saying $4 trillion. Some people are saying $3.5 trillion. This bill, in year one, might cut $12 billion if you just want to be generous. So who here thinks it's cool to cut $12 billion in exchange for $4 trillion? I don't think that's cool at all. This bill actually keeps the Biden baseline intact for the federal agencies. The Republicans in Congress have been saying for months that we need to get back to pre-COVID spending levels. This bill canonizes post-COVID spending levels brought to us by Joe Biden and the Democrats. This bill keeps all of Joe Biden's policy, all of Joe Biden's spending intact. This bill does nothing for the Green New Deal subsidies that are going to cripple our electric grid. So when Americans are trying to figure out that they went and bought this electric car that they were subsidized to buy, but when they plug it in, there's not enough electricity on the grid. That is because Washington subsidized all these Green New Deal projects, and nobody stood up to it except for people standing behind me right now. To my Republican colleagues.
Well, and he was saying vote no. He was saying vote no on that. Sandra, I want to know, how can 30-year-olds be on Medicaid? Do you know? I was shocked. You know, if they're probably, they check all the right boxes, Sandra. From Jim, $150 billion Ukraine down the toilet. Inflation is taxed. That's a good point. Trump did raise the debt by $6 trillion, yet there was no inflation. Why? Because we were pumping oil to a point that we were a net exporter. From Sandra, hence, why are property taxes so flipping high? I'm fighting mine. And good luck. Yeah. Dr. Donna, sign in to know what is in it. Yes, sign it to know what is in it. And then from Jacob, the Treasury is projected to make money, $5 trillion this year, even with the Trump tax cuts. So keeping in mind that what we're arguing about is how much we should raise our credit card limit. Right. And no one's saying that's cut the credit card limit. And they just betrayed us all again. I mean, they all stood there. I mean, you remember, right? And I was happy about it. Chuck was like, they're going to screw us. And you were right. Because they always.
That's not hard. That's not a hard pronunciation.
One person, though, we can count on is Lauren Boebert, Representative Lauren Boebert. Marjorie Taylor Greene is getting kind of weird, but we'll get into that.
She got bought out by the speaker.
But Lauren Boebert also is voting no. And so if we could please play the Lauren Boebert soundbite.
The problem with it. The bill Biden negotiated fuels inflation, adds trillions to our debt, and leaves a blank check for more of the same nonsense I came here to stop. I am not for an unlimited debt ceiling increase. As presented today, I'm voting no. That's why I'm pushing right now to make sure this new bill is allowed to be debated and amended, if not killed entirely. We did not fight to fix Congress only to watch another last minute bill that spends trillions of dollars be shoved our way for a vote without debate and without the ability to offer amendments to it. So I'm sticking to my guns on this one. And once again, I am fighting to allow Congress to simply do its job. I'll keep you updated on how all of that plays out, but please, don't let anyone scare you or deceive you about what is really going on here. There's a lot of talking points that are floating around out there that are false. Under this bill, spending goes way, way up. The country's credit card will continue to get maxed out, and I don't want any part of that. So that's why I am continuing to stand strong for you and hold the line.
And I think from what I'm gathering with the Rules Committee, they're not allowing much in the way of debate. Schumer is saying we can't have any amendments because, see, they've issued also this false deadline. Janet Yellen. Oh, so we should believe Janet Yellen. She's like, June 5th. Sky falls. Again, this is like your credit card payment, right? If you owed trillions of dollars in a credit card payment and you were to call the bank and say, look, we're trying to work this out. We're going to be a little late. I'm pretty sure the bank, would be like, okay, right?
Is the warrant going off?
It's just ridiculous that they make it sound like the world will end if you don't have it by June 5th. And she's just making that up, by the way. That's just an estimation on her point, too. But in the meantime,
could be end of June, could be June 5th. It could be never.
Or I know, maybe we could just make a payment or something, yeah. You know, or maybe we could cut back. Again, if I were to come to you and Chuck, you know, you'd be like, Julie, I'm sorry, you're going to have to skip the Nordstrom half annual sale this year, or at least kind of limit it. Instead, they're like, we want to keep spending the way that we're spending.
And the only opposition are people like Tom Cole from Oklahoma, who on the other side is saying, wait a minute, we got to have that $300 billion war plane that we promised thing. And we also got this submarine thing that, you know, we got to do, or we won't be safe because we've given everything we've got to Ukraine, so come on.
That's right. And from Dr. Donna, kill it. Stop amending and wanting to appear friendly and bipartisan. Well, and we'll talk about that a little bit with Dave in terms of, I don't know that they want to, why is it that they betray us, right? I think that there is something, like you said, the conservative treehouse was talking about, you know, the Democrats want money so they can get into power. But the Republicans want power so they can get money. It's like you said, they do all this. Well, explain your analogy where the Democrats bring in a dollar and everybody gets a piece of it, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they get a dollar in and 30 cents because of Planned Parenthood and 12 cents goes to PBS, and all this money gets funneled through grants to NGOs. There's enormous a dispersal of Democratic money.
All which helps keep them getting elected.
Yeah, all these people want, you know, will go out and knock on doors, do whatever else to keep the money flow going. The Republicans, it's easy. Raytheon and all that fund the congressional campaigns, either through the Chamber of Commerce or other ones, and the money stops. It doesn't go anywhere. Right, right. I mean, you know, maybe a few consultants get some money, but it never goes down to Republican groups who'd be working for them. It simply goes to the elected representatives. And therefore, on election day, you have hundreds of thousands of Democrats who have a lot to lose. So they have financial interest in it. You have none other than the greater good or something. And
Well, and from Jacob, the Republicans are throwing away a great opportunity to stop the FBI, the Justice Department, the EPA, the Labor Department, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly. Even if the government shuts down, people are still paying their quarterly taxes, which pushes the drop dead default date to September of 2023. Janet Yellen says it's like maybe tomorrow. Jacob, I'm sorry. And then it says, Jacob, it's from Leo, it seems like SCOTUS is the only branch of government looking out for people, and we'll see. From Charlene, marching toward Marxism, the government has all the money. Right, and you see how well that goes, right? They have all the money, they print all the money, they take all the money, they keep all the money, and they funnel it down to themselves. And then from Jacob, if the government shuts down, think of big cities like New York, Chicago, LA, and more that will have cash flow problems. But I think here's the thing. There's not going to be any cash flow problems. I mean, they like to make us think that, right? Again, it's just, I think the credit card analogy is so apt. It's just as if, you know, let's say they're like, the credit card company says, no, Julie, you're really overextended here. You owe us, you know, $31 trillion right now. We're not going to raise it. Then you'd have to just stop spending. I mean, there is that whole other answer, right? There's plenty of things they could stop spending on.
It's interesting that Tim Scott, who is, you know, McConnell's favorite boy, has come out against the deal. Why? Because he announced he's running for president. He knows the American people hate it. But if he wasn't, he would have been a yes vote. He would have been an absolute yes vote.
Right.
And it does tell you they know the American people, at least the Republican half or whatever half the grassroots are, is hate it. I mean, they just hate it and they don't care.
No.
And it's just amazing stuff.
Well, and we have then Matt Gaetz, and there was some pushback. Ken Buck was one of them. I'll give him a little bit of credit for this, for saying, you know, maybe if McCarthy pushes this through the way he's pushing it through, that's breaking his trust. He's breaking what he said he was going to do. Maybe we need to have a vote to oust him. Matt Gaetz addressed, I think in the end they have decided not to, but Matt Gaetz addressed that too. If we could please play the Matt Gaetz vote or soundbite.
If a majority of Republicans are against a piece of legislation and you use Democrats to pass it, that would immediately be a black letter violation of the deal we had with McCarthy to allow his ascent to the speakership, and it would likely trigger an immediate motion to vacate. I think Speaker McCarthy knows that. That's why he's working hard to make sure that he gets, you know, 120, 150, 160 votes. And that's why those of us who are not supportive of the bill are trying to point out that many of the changes are cosmetic in nature, and Joe Biden's administration is going to be able to waive certain requirements and certain conditions that sound like great talking points, but that don't save the country from the ruin that the Biden administration is bringing us to.
So what he's talking about there is back again when they remember when they promised us they're going to get rid of those 87,000 IRS agents. They're going to hold the line. And he was saying if they didn't have at least half of the Republicans in the House, which would be 112, right? If he didn't have the support of at least, you know, 113 of them, then he wouldn't bring a bill forward. Well, I mean, that he was like, oh, that's silly.
435 in the House, so it would be more than that. But
what
417, 418, depending upon one or two people.
No, of the majority, not of the
House. 218, so I guess it's
yeah. He had promised that if at least, you know, one plus half of the Republicans in the House didn't support it, he wouldn't bring it. So, I mean, he didn't even, what? Again, I have amnesia, right? I don't even remember. So are you sure I said that? That soundbite, that's AI generated. I never even said something like that. Well, now we're going to play. Chuck wanted me to bring this on, even though he's an idiot on this. Newt Gingrich.
I'm not an idiot.
No, not you, Newt Gingrich. You know, you're brilliant. But here is why Newt Gingrich is explaining to us and see if you can make sense of this, why we need this. So if we could please play the Newt soundbite.
Let's get your take on it.
Well, look, I think it's pretty straightforward. If you look at where we were going, which was the Biden position of no amendments of any kind, no negotiations, just keep raising the debt ceiling, keep going business as usual. And you look where over 100 days, the House Republicans, who shocked the country by actually passing a bill that had real change, real reform, real cuts. And the truth is, we are not nearly as well off as we'd like to be because we didn't have a Republican president to negotiate with, but we're dramatically better off than we would have been if we just rolled over for Joe Biden. So the question, I think, for Republicans, and probably where Congressman Bishop and I have the deepest disagreement, is the consequence of a no vote. I believe, having done this, as you know, in my new book, A March to the Majority, where I explain how we spent 4 years negotiating with Bill Clinton, getting to the only 4 years of a balanced budget in your lifetime, we did it one step at a time. Well, this is the first step. Now, Republicans can decide it's a pretty reasonable first step, not everything they want, but it starts the game towards the balanced budget, towards appropriations this fall. Remember, what McCarthy did was establish a ceiling, not a basement.
Hey, is it like living in delusion land? I mean, how do you want to tackle this about how like wrong he is and he's gaslighting you too, I think.
Yeah, well, yes, he's saying, you know, this isn't, if you vote no, then what happens is who knows what. But if you vote yes, you retain power, and therefore maybe you have some appropriation bills. But the truth is, and then he says, well, we don't have the presidency. Well, what happened? We had the presidency, the Senate, and the House. Nothing. We voted.
They raised the debt ceiling again, right?
Well, yeah. And moreover, you know, the House and the Senate Republicans kept on spending more and more money. So, okay, the House votes for these appropriations, let's say it does. And there are massive cuts in them. And it goes to the Senate, and they restore them all. And then they have a negotiation. And what happens after negotiation? The Republicans fold again. Or else somehow they get it past the Senate, and then the president vetoes it. And what happens? You know, you're going to go financial ruin again. So, I mean, they've already called your bluff once. So everybody knows McCarthy can be easily bluffed. So they can pass whatever they want in the House. And it'll be filled with all kinds of military lard. And then it'll go up the Senate, and they'll add all the social lard, and then they'll both pass with both lards.
Right.
And that will be...
This is good. Good for you all. Well, and here's the thing. To me, this is what I don't understand where Newt Gingrich... Well, I know where he's coming from. He's gaslighting us because he understands that it's not about actually doing right by the citizens who voted for you. It's not about keeping your promises. It is about retaining your power, okay? And making your donors and the wealthy elites who keep you elected, keeping them happy at whatever cost to the rest of us. So I think McCarthy held all the cards here. He makes it sound like... I mean, McCarthy could have been driving the hard bike. Why is he even paying attention to Joe Biden? Why isn't McCarthy saying to Biden, I'm not talking to you. We have the cards here.
Well,
we're going to vote no, Joe. You got that? We're going to vote no. And we'll see if Janet Yellen is right or not. And if you don't want to be responsible, then it'll be your fault. I get put out to people.
We both know it's not President Biden.
Well, and, right. Well the Biden, all right.
No, but it's important. Yeah, no, yeah. It is important. Who's buying it? People say it's all the, you know, really bright Bernie Sanders people behind it. And who do the Republicans have? The really dumb Republicans. And therefore, they say, we'll do this. Okay, we'll do that, but we'll do this. And they go, okay. And really, they've outlooped them.
Right.
And it's
well, this
disgusting.
Is from Jacob. It's like, why did McCarthy even go to Biden? Exactly. Why didn't McCarthy tell Biden, you know, I'm going to be in my office from 2 to 4. If you want to come over here and discuss how you want to cut things, that's cool with us. Otherwise, we're going to vote no. And Charlene, yes, he's gaslighting. Don't we have a majority in the House? Exactly. And what's the point about having majority of the House if you're going to cave into Biden and say, well, he drove a hard deal and we got a lot of what we wanted? Again,
I mean, they should identify who the Republican negotiators were. which
Bernie Sanders. I mean,
the Republicans brought over the usual establishment hacks to negotiate it. They didn't bring over Jim Jordan or anybody else. They brought up their expert budgetary hacks and they got themselves handed it to them.
Yeah. Charmaine, does the Senate exist anymore asking for a friend? Yeah. Just a rubber stamp to make it seem as if it's bipartisan. Well, again, I go back to, why do they do this? I mean, the Democrats knew. I don't think Joe Biden, I don't think Chuck Schumer is particularly worried. I don't think, you know, Bernie Sanders was particularly worried. I mean, he didn't get everything he wanted because they understand the Republicans have been doing this forever, right? I mean, they say one thing, they get elected, and then they turn around and they do something else. And you have a handful, about 44, I think, right now, who are saying they're going to vote no. And I'll be honest.
Makes no difference.
Yeah, I got to wonder how much of them are just posturing too, right? If their vote actually, I mean, I trust Lauren Boebert, but Ken Buck, I got to be honest, I kind of wonder.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's easy for him to say no, knowing that it's going to pass anyway, but if it was a swing vote. And so why they just completely abandon Republican ideals. And it's like you said, it's they don't care what they say. They only care about maintaining power. And I think to a certain extent, what's going on with DeSantis and all of that.
Well, it's, you know, as conservative points, it's not even power. They just want to be in the room.
Power. Right.
They're in the room so they can get money.
Right.
So they'll have to be dealt with. And therefore,
and they have a certain amount of power in order to get in the room.
Yeah, but not much. And that's why the Republicans in the state house, you know, they don't care. Antius doesn't care as long as he can make deals. So he has to control the Republican Party. Controlling the state, well, that's a bridge too far.
Right. And they just like lied straight to us, right? They lied straight to us.
Well, we could have played it, and we do have, there is a tip of McCarthy saying, the first thing I promise you is we will defund those 87,000. Yeah, sure
He did, although I think as Leo pointed out, the deep state was ready, right? They took it out of the sticky note fund, he said, and put it in the post-it note fund or something like that. So it's the same thing. Yeah, because they need them, guys. That's part of their plan. Mm-hmm. They need to start cracking down on us financially, right? I mean, you start limiting people's bank accounts. Look at Matt Taibbi, right? The guy who was doing the Twitter files. Isn't it ironic, they're coincidental that the day he's testifying before Congress on what he found about the deep state involvement in the Twitter files, the IRS shows up at his door. And when was the last time the IRS
Jim
showed up
Justice,
at somebody's
Governor
door?
Governor of West Virginia declares he's going to run for the Senate seat, and all of a sudden now the Justice Department's after his
family. Investigating him.
And Jim Comey was doing his usual tour of softball interviews with Anderson Cooper, and he's just great. I can't believe these Republicans. They're tearing at the fabric of their country. We need to vote. And it's almost saying, what does it matter? We voted for Trump, and you made sure he wasn't president.
I mean, in a way, as awful as the Democrats are, the establishment Republicans are just far worse. At least the Democrats are giving their voters, at least some of their voters, something that they want, right?
A lot of their voters.
Yeah, the Republicans don't. They just take it for themselves. I mean, like you said, it's like Kevin McCarthy doesn't care. They get enough money so that they can stay elected, and they want to retain a little bit of power, like you said. So they get a seat at the table, and so the donors have to contribute. I mean, I personally think the conservative treehouse guy is right when he says they don't care. The donors and the elites and the Wall Street guys, they don't actually care if DeSantis wins or not. All they want to do is make sure that Trump and us lose. And this is the same thing. McCarthy doesn't care if we're mad about this. He doesn't care if we're like, we're going to send other people there. He's like, big deal, whatever. I don't care. Right. If I'm House Majority Leader, if I'm House Minority Leader, all the same to me personally, when you get right down to it.
Jacob says if the government votes for a national sales tax, they'll get rid of the IRS. And that won't happen because the government will lose power. No, it doesn't. You know, the value added tax, which is a sort of a sales tax in Europe, hasn't gotten rid of any government. It just hides it from people so they don't have to see it. Sales tax, you see it, but value added tax. You don't.
But so we have Dave Williams with us.
All right.
Dave,
great to have you. The chairman of the state GOP, a grassroots guy who wrote a great letter asking Congressman Lamborn what the heck he was doing. And great to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
So why don't you tell us what the letter said?
Sure. I mean, it was a pretty straightforward letter saying that, you know, we need to oppose, the Republicans generally need to oppose this, you know, debt ceiling compromise, you know, surrender. And those aren't my words. Those are the words of some of our own congressional leaders here in Colorado. Lauren Boebert and Ken Buck, you know, both stood up and said, we can't support this deal. It's not good for the American people. It's not good for Colorado. It only further indebts our children and their children. And, you know, bottom line is it adds trillions of dollars onto our, you know, ever-growing national debt. And we need to start, you know, forcing major concessions if we're going to really, you know, get a handle on this. And that's what the email said. And it went on to thank Lauren Boebert and Ken Buck for standing strong on that issue. And then it, you know, made a plea to Doug Lamborn. Doug Lamborn, who represents the 5th Congressional, has been kind of quiet on this topic. And, you know, your audience can certainly draw their own conclusions as to why. Really, the bottom line is we need him to vote no. We need him to show a unified front with Lauren Boebert and Ken Buck and vote no on this deal. It's not what Colorado Republicans expect their leaders to do, and we shouldn't give in, you know, to the Washington establishment or the special interest insiders who, you know, are liking this deal that was struck between McCarthy and Biden. You know, it might be good for them, but it's not good for us.
Bill Kristol likes it, and you know, you've got people. But, you know, we talked
And we should point out, Dave ran against Doug Lamborn, and I wish you had won. Doug Lamborn pulled the same stunt on the Liz Cheney vote, too, right? Just refused to comment. So has he gotten back to you guys yet and said, okay, Dave, you're right. You know, that's exactly what I was going to say. Or is it radio silence?
I think Dave's going to get a call. We haven't
heard a response from Doug. And I think the local press may have gotten... There was one article that I remember reading. I can't remember if it was the Gazette or some other publication, but the spokesperson for his office said that he was deliberating on the matter still.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
I
obviously ran against Doug Lamborn because I didn't think, you know, he was the best for the 5th Congressional, but at the end of the day, he's still in that office, and he has a responsibility and a duty not only to the Republican Party, but to that district, to my district. You know, he needs to vote no, because this is not why we sent him or a majority of Republicans nationwide to the House of Representatives. We wanted a check and balance on Joe Biden, not something that... just kind of enables them further, just maybe not as bad as it would have been, but it's still not good. And people like Chip Roy and the House Freedom Caucus are really, you know, demonstrating and making the case as to why we need a better deal. And this thing really doesn't cut spending. It's at, you know, being generous about it, it's more of a spending freeze, but only for 2 years.
And then after you went through a huge, gorging banquet on COVID spending, and now you can't even absorb all the spending, and you're going to kind of not do it. You're going to regurgitate for 2 years before you take the next huge meal. We've been asking on the show, why do Republican leaders always betray their followers?
It's a good question, and I think there's probably a number of answers as to why. You know, one of the obvious answers that comes to mind is cowardice. You know, there are a number of Republicans who talk tough, but when they actually get to the Beltway, they cave because they don't want to handle the pressure. They don't want to deal with it. Because let's face it, they're politicians. They're conditioned to want to make friends, not create conflict. So they avoid it like the plague. And so I think cowardice is one. Number two is just plain old fashioned lying. You know, there are a number of politicians who talk a good game, and, you know, they didn't have good intentions to start out. They just said what they needed to in order to get elected. And they have no, you know, there's no difference between them or any other politician, regardless of the political affiliation they may have. They simply just want to be there and have power and, and grow government, and they got no problem with it so long as they're the ones that's sitting at the table and managing the government.
And then, go ahead.
Well, I think the last point here is that others do it for their own self-interest, right? You have, and it's sort of connected to the reason too, but it's a little bit more surgical, you know, to borrow a word from military tacticians. It's for their own self-interest, right? If I do this deal now, it will somehow give me favor down the road. And their motivations could be good, could be bad, somewhere in between, but they're doing it because, you know, it somehow is going to pay off for them personally.
Let me ask you this. I mean, back when McCarthy, there was a fight going on about his, you know, whether that he was going to become the leader. And you could see people like Sean Hannity and some of the pundits swinging. Initially, they were like, oh, we shouldn't fight for him. And then as they realized that the vast majority of the public really liked the fact that they were going to get rid of the IRS agents, they were going to limit spending. I mean, they really liked all of the things that the Freedom Caucus was pushing for. And then, and so everybody started supporting it, right? And then McCarthy came out and he said, yes, I'm going to do this. And everyone's like, hooray. And of course, then, as we know now, he was like, as you said, flat out lying. Do you think, because you've been around, you've been a politician and you've been, you know, you've been at the state house. Do you think he knew all along that, and did they all know all along he was going to betray us around the corner? Or was there ever a moment of shining hope, or was it all just gaslighting from the beginning?
I think there's a lot of things that, right after his election, McCarthy was doing things that he said he would do. You know, and that, and there's, you know, if you were to take out the debt ceiling compromise here, you probably wouldn't complain so much about Kevin McCarthy, right? But now that we have this, and this is a big deal because it's, we're talking about money we don't have but they want to spend, and we're not just talking about chump change, we're talking about trillions of dollars. Right. You factor this in, then it's kind of like, yep, our worst, you know, fears were confirmed, right? We put this guy in charge and he's not delivering on his promises, and we forget about all the other stuff that we did like that he was doing.
He did do some, but go ahead.
And I guess ultimately my problem in all this is that, you know, speaking as a newly elected party chair for Colorado, you know, I'm very well aware of how people just lose trust. They lose trust in the Republican brand and the Republican Party because of deals like this. They don't want our leaders to go to Washington and cut deals and make friends. They want our guys to right the ship, you know, and if it means that we have to suffer through some temporary pain, you know, then we do that because it's the right thing to do. We're talking about principle at this point, right? We don't have this money. Why are we continuing to spend this money, which will only, you know, devalue our dollar and, you know, cause the cost of living to rise for everyone?
Well,
make sense. If we're going to, I guess what I'm trying to say is that people will not vote for Republicans if we can't keep our word. Our word should be our bond. And when it comes to reining in out of control spending and government, we need to be hardlined about it. That's a big reason why people elected us into the majority.
Well, and one of the things too, and it's not even all just about, I guess, like the debt ceiling. For instance, you know, they vowed that they would have all these investigations into the Hunter Biden situation and the Biden family, right? And then what do? They subpoena Ray, they subpoena these documents, and Ray just says, nope, not going to give it to you. And I mean, so here's a chance where you're like, okay, we're going to carve out that FBI budget. We're going to take that away. You know, I mean, it's their chance. They do control the purse. And I think that's where people are disappointed. I mean, I imagine you and probably state Republican Party leaders around the country are just going, oh my God, they're doing it to us again, right? I mean, how do you, you're trying to raise money, you're trying to get the state GOP righted, and now you've got a deal, and you're like, no, seriously, things are getting better, they're getting better. I mean, this has got to make it tough for all of you guys to do your job too.
Sure. If you don't trust Republicans to follow through, then why would you donate to their cause? Why would you donate to helping getting them elected? People won't do that. And that, I think, you know, for whatever reason, our leaders at the national level lose sight of this, or they deliberately ignore it, you know, for whatever deal that might come along that they think will somehow be beneficial to them and their own success. I don't know. It just, at the end of the day, it hurts. It hurts our ability to actually win. This national debt deal, you know, is certainly connected to our efforts locally, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone disputes that. If we don't have a good grasp on the issues and good leaders following through nationally, that trickles down to our candidates here, and it makes it harder for us to win. So it's massively important, right, for our national leaders to understand that they could very well sink, you know, state legislative candidates or county commissioner candidates, because the Republican brand is hurting, and they're not going to trust any of us.
Well, last year I was thinking, you know, okay, the Republican leaders in Colorado statewide, we had Mike Lynch in the House, we had Senator Lundeen in the Senate, and KBB was the party chair. None of those people believe in anything. We watched KBB just loot the Republican Party for her and others' aggrandizement. I watched Senator Lundeen up close and personal when I was on the SEC a couple years ago. He didn't say a word, didn't take a vote that wasn't in his mind the whole time. It says, help me be the next president of the Senate, state Senate, or hurt it. And he said, I will make no enemies. I will take no stands. I will vote for things. Sometimes he voted on the side of the establishment. He felt that was going that way. But no word, not a single word out of his mouth wasn't just calculated to the holy grail of getting to be Senate president. Having known some former state Republican Senate presidents, it doesn't do you any good. You can ask Andrew Romanoff what it did him to be to be Speaker of the House. You know, it's going, buddy, it ain't going to do you all that much good, but it's amazing we have the worst leaders in the world, and you're an exception to that. But it's,
well, I will say this, I will commend you, Dave, because I don't think we would have seen a letter that you sent out from somebody like KBB, right? At least you're taking a stand, and you're taking a stand that the people who voted for you wanted you to take, right? I mean, I guess we should not be surprised that we're here, but so there is hope, I guess. But you're right. It's got to be frustrating when it's like, you know, you're sort of like you're taking friendly fire at the same time.
Well, you know, I'm a grassroots Republican. There's no question about that. That's my history. And my take on it is all we can do is control, you know, what we can control. Right now, the grassroots controls the Republican Party in Colorado, and as such, we're going to do things differently. We're going to speak out on these issues, and we don't care if there are elected Republicans who want to go against the platform or break their word. We're still going to be true to ours. We're going to be true to our platform, and we're going to make sure that, hey, you know, you may have lost trust in this individual Republican here, but right now you can trust in the grassroots, because we are going to fight the good fight. Yep. And, you know, you may disagree with how we're going to ultimately defeat the Democrats or the strategies we're going to employ, but one thing you can count on is that we're going to keep our word when it comes to the platform and the principles and the values that we want to champion. When we say we're for limited government and less regulation, less taxes, we're pro-life, we're pro-gun, those, you can take that to the bank. That's who we are as a party. And, you know, go ahead and hold others accountable, especially, you know, the folks in our party who don't want to, you know, rely on those time-tested principles we hold dear. But we're, as an organization, we're going to move forward in a conservative way, because that's what the people want.
Well, there's a question, interesting question from Dr. Donna. I asked Dave about Weld County Repubs asking a school board candidate to step down as they told her they had another one they wanted to support. Never heard back from Dave, so assume that works in the party. And I'll give my view toward, other than the Weld County Republicans are a bunch of rhinos and are awful. There is a thing where we can't just have intramural fights on everything when we're trying to get school candidates elected. Now, if that other person, another woman, wanted to run, well, the Weld County Republicans can't do anything about it. She can run. But yeah. Republicans do have to figure out how to win. And one of the ways is getting great candidates that we all get behind. So I'm, you know, I'm not for anybody. If they truly, you know, that's God's wish, then you run wherever they tell you. Otherwise, we've got to figure out some ways to win. And if other candidates look stronger now, if they're really just because they're left wing, and you can, well, screw you, Weld County. But, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying to somebody, hey, we're going to support somebody else. You know, you get to run if you want to. But I think Republicans have to figure somehow how to win rather than having, you know, huge fights at every primary. But I'll let you answer it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, we definitely don't want anyone to think that there's a group of folks in a back room smoking cigars, you know, figuring out who our nominees are going to be or who the candidates are going to be. But we also want to make sure that we're, you know, putting all of our support, you know, behind candidates that stand the best chance to win. And so it's certainly a balancing act when you have a number of good candidates running who ultimately will split the vote. So, you know, all I can do as a party chair is try to facilitate a conversation between yeah. these candidates and help them, you know, make the best decision they can and let them, you know, remind them that it's not about them. It's not about any individual person. You know, it's about electing conservatives who will move the ball forward for our team. But sometimes, as you know, Chuck, egos get in the way and people think that they can, you know, they can do it themselves, or that they're the ones that are going to save us all. And
well,
with respect
particularly in a nonpartisan, quote unquote, election, if two conservatives run against each other in the general, because there's no primary, you are assuring a Democrat, maybe assuring that a Democrat wins.
Yeah, I mean that's got. We have to remember that. We absolutely have to understand that, you know, at a certain point, we do got to consolidate support behind someone that we do think is going to, you know, move forward our conservative grassroots principles. And if you don't have that, then hey, you don't have that. Maybe focus on some other race. But the other thing I'll say is, you know, anyone that's trying to get a hold of me, you know, please know that I have a terrible mess on my hands that I'm trying to untangle and clean up. And so I'm kind of prioritizing certain things. It's sort of a triage situation.
Yes,
so
yes.
If I haven't gotten back to you, just hold tight. I'll get back to you. It might take a little longer than normal, though.
So are you seeing, Dave, that you're having more fun than you thought you were going to have?
Yeah, is this a lot more fun than you imagined? what do you mean the worst job in the world? Worst non-paying job.
It doesn't have to be the worst job in the world. And a part of my job is to make sure that we're cleaning up, you know, the organization. We're making it a well-run organization. So at the very least, we have a good foundation upon which our efforts and our candidates can, you know, use as a springboard for success. And, you know, I'm not going to make any promises or pretend that the Colorado Republican Party is going to somehow bring us to the promised land all on its own. All I can tell you is that we're going to put together a good organization that's going to do our part to elect good people to office. And hopefully with a bit of luck and good candidates and good messaging and good timing, we'll succeed.
Leo wants to know, Dave, it says, Julie, can you ask Dave how people can get on his or the party email list so that everybody knows?
Yeah, you bet. The easiest way is to go to our website. It's collogop.org. That's collogop.org. And right up at the top front page, you'll see a form that you can fill out, and that will get you plugged in. And of course, you can do a drop down on our menu and look at getting involved at our getting involved page, and you'll be able to sign up or subscribe there.
Okay, and then I was gonna say I get the email, so and I think they just go out to all kinds of people. So Leo, just go to the Colorado GOP.org or COLOGOP.org website, and that'll get you there. Well, David, we've run out of, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
As you said, you're not busy. You've got a new baby. You've got all kinds of fun going on at party headquarters. So thank you for your time.
We appreciate it very much.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you.
That's Dave Williams. GOP grassroots chair, and he's just a great guy.
That's right. And Sandra says, thank you, Leo, and thank you, Dave. Dr. Donna says, thank you. And Sandra says, always great to hear from Dave. Yeah, and he is, I listen sometimes with some of you, you know, you guys have your conversations with the opt-out and things like that.
As a hall monitor.
You have the conversation in the middle of the living room. So Dave is working hard. And again, I was glad to see the letter go out, mm-hmm. questioning Doug Lamborn, that, and actually just saying, vote no. Right. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that people need to say, people need to hear. And that's a kind of thing I think that makes it harder for them to betray us. Right. Before, who knew what Doug Lamborn was going to do? Well, now we know. Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe he'll still keep doing it, but still, at least we know we're being screwed now.
That's right? Okay. Yeah. Enjoy it while you're being screwed.
Well, not enjoy it. But that's going to do it for us today.
Thank everybody, in particular the chair. And all the great comments. Some great ones.
Yeah, that's right. And on Friday, we've got a couple of things I'm going to talk about. Again, I think it's really clear that the Republican establishment, the swamp, they don't really care whether DeSantis or Chris Christie or Nikki Haley or them win. They just want to stop Trump. Right. And they're spending all their money on that instead of doing things like ballot harvesting, right, which would make sense. We're going to have Mark Poff on as well. He raised an interesting point. He's been noticing that in some of the conversations, the IRS agents are not being referred to as agents, they're being referred to as police. Right. And this is all part of, he's been warning about this for a while,
right,
that this is all a push to federalize everything.
Another 90,000.
Right. And instead of thinking of the IRS as auditors, basically, they're
think
going to be
policemen.
Criminal enforcers.
That's
right.
Carry guns.
Exactly. So we'll talk to him about that. And it will be Party Friday.
Yay.
So we'll see you all then. Everybody, chuckandjulie.com. You can get links to all our show. You can subscribe. We appreciate everybody who subscribed to us now, both to the newsletter and also the subscribers. And we'll see.
Have a great afternoon.
Yeah.